107.3.
Excellent. We continue in our own magical way and formally welcome Philip Hamlyn-Williams to the studio today. Now, previously, Philip, we've referred to your good self as the guru and genius behind the Lincoln Literary Festival.
Neither of which are true.
Well, I don't know.
But yes, I am thoroughly involved with the...
You are the chair.
A piece of furniture.
Exactly. Fit-for-purpose furniture, has to be said as well. Katie, of course, your first midweek drive of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Hurrah! Back with us in full force, which means you've both spoken to our special guest from Jersey, but for how much longer? Well, frankly, we don't know before she becomes our official correspondent from Isleworth. I know. Yeah, this is critical. From Jersey to Isleworth, it's... in some ways, just a few inches on a map, depending on the scale that you're actually working towards.
Should I admit that I don't know where Isleworth is?
Well, there you have it. A Lincolnshire-less Katie Dore has gone live on air with a quote which almost actually beats Facebook is a funny beast, which actually Philip actually launched into our pre-show warm-up that we actually had from that point of view. Philip, are you familiar with Isleworth?
Well, Isleworth, I was looking at a map of Greater London dated about 1816.
Yes.
And London itself is actually very small. And you have these little villages, of which Isleworth was one.
Yeah, yeah.
But others, Edmonton, Enfield,
yes.
Tiny little villages. Yeah. Paddington, a weeny little village.
Strawberry Hill, barely existed,
Barely existed.
barely there, just Horace Walpole and his Victorian follies. That's the whole essence of that. So it's part of the Greater London Metropolis. It's set up there. And I've seen on Facebook your pictures of your flat. Not in a scary way, but it looks okay. You know, it looks okay for
yes, in terms of that. It's a deck chair style wallpaper that unfortunately is part flock that I can't live with. It's like cappuccino coloured and it's really horrible. So that has to go at some point.
Yeah, so cappuccino-coloured wallpaper, it's not appropriate. Yeah, I can appreciate that.
No.
It's sort of that. So the listener to Siren Radio clearly needs to have the answer to this. What exactly are you ordering in the Chinese takeaway?
Well, I've done a full day's work today. I've been flipping around documents that date back to 1362, I kid you not, and trying to decipher various bits of script which could be in Latin, French or English, but the handwriting is so rubbish I can't work out what it is. But I know the dates are right because I could decipher them. But I just thought it's been a long day and I just need not to cook when I go home. So this is my little bit of indulgence.
Absolutely.
Chicken and an egg fried rice.
And some chicken. Look, it's the best way to celebrate Ash Wednesday that I can think of, to be absolutely honest. I believe there's another festival that's going on as well today. It's the Feast of St. Lophocolia, if I believe, ancient saint who had a name change to become, I think it's the V word in some way, shape or form. But nice to see that the Chinese is still manifesting its wonderness from that point of view. Anyway, speaking of food, let's talk Compassionate Lincoln Big Soup, because I know, Anna, you would be keen to find out from Philip what this is all about and how Compassionate Lincoln is actually, literally, in an era where we initially once feeling is it's a bit like food banks. We shouldn't have to have food banks.
It's a soup kitchen sort of thing, like they sell, restaurants give their soup in large quantities to raise money for various causes, or it's something that's a regular thing that looks after the people that can't, you know, because we've got Salvation Army that does that in Jersey. They give free soup to people every day.
Philip,
and they're good, the Salvation Army in Jersey.
How does it compare with the Salvation Army?
It's completely different. Now, let me roll back a little bit to the end of the 19th century when Joseph Rushton gave Lincoln Drill Hall to the city. And he did that as a place where the Lincolnshire volunteers could drill. But he also insisted that the drill hall should have a kitchen.
Exactly.
Which it could use to feed the poor of the city.
An army marches on its stomach,
absolutely.
Let's face it. You can't be doing that marching up and down for drill, in case people are wondering, is that kind of a pneumatic drill? No, different kind of drill. Just want to make that quite clear.
So the big soup is different again. The idea of the big soup is that people get together, they all pay £5 into a kitty.
Yes.
And that kitty is then available to be won by a community group that makes a presentation to those people present. The idea is we have one or more community groups coming along with an idea that they pitch to those people. Those people then question them on the idea. And then whilst we're drinking soup, we
or vote. Supping, perhaps.
Or supping soup. We vote on what we think was the best idea. And the best idea takes away the kitty for the day.
See, even the dogs of Jersey actually like that idea. You can hear them barking in the background there.
Yeah,
exactly. Listen, Anna, you'll be leaving the island soon. The dog could be left behind. It's just you miss the dog when you're in Isleworth. You'll say, for the days.
Can I just add what the irony is? Where the dog lives, they've got big green bins for public rubbish collection that have got the Borough of Wandsworth written on them.
Yeah.
So how these green bins got from Wandsworth to the streets of St Helier's beyond me.
Well,
one day I'll actually pluck up the courage to ask.
There are, of course, a number of strategies. Tourist souvenirs being one. I mean, how often have you actually been in a strange city? Lincoln, for instance, and said, oh, I fancy that. I'll have a bin.
I'll have that City of Lincoln wheelie bin.
City of Lincoln wheelie bin. And easily smuggled away, because these wheelie bins are so easy to sort of hide under all sorts of articles of clothing, etc. Just wheel them through. Conceivably, the City of Jersey might have had a job lot that you decide to actually get a whole sort of wholesale batch there. Or maybe they were just missent to you. I mean, those are my sort of three strategies. I mean, Katie, any
does make these mistakes, doesn't it? So maybe they ordered something off Amazon that was just something
And likewise, how often you've been actually sort of, you know, using the online commerce sites like the Big River in South America, and you've accidentally ordered half a dozen wheelie bins. You know, it happens on a day-by-day basis.
I once accidentally ordered 15 kilo of cuttlefish.
Yeah.
Nobody needs 15 kilos of cuttlefish.
I'm sure we could find a use for it. We're going to find out more about the Lincoln Big Soup and the big ideas that will be emerging from that, and also how people can actually get involved with this and connect as the programme proceeds this evening, Anna. We've found out what you're actually consuming, so Katie will be asking you those last two questions before we head up to Edinburgh to hopefully contact William Coles and find out his views on life, the universe and so on. Katie, over to you.
Anna, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed, thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I'd be absolutely honoured. Thank you for the offer.
Just, I feel as though we connect. I mean, don't worry, Anna, the jingles for Isleworth will be even more wonderful than the idents we used to use for Jersey. It'll happen.
Another song.
Brilliant.
This is a song of Justin's, it's called Driftwood. Just like the driftwood of a dream, left on the seashore of sleep. Just like the words no one rhymed, lost in the desert of time. Time waits for no one at all, no, not even you. You thought you'd seen it all before, you really thought you knew. I don't remember what was said in the confusion that night. I wanna know what's on my mind, what's in the future we will decide. You really thought you knew.
unless, of course, you've got a particularly good use for it. Moody Blues and the live version of Driftwood back in the day, before even Katie Dorr was actually born. William Coles in Edinburgh, how are you, sir?
I'm very chirpy, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Yes, I'm fine, because if the alternative is just not worth contemplating. I could go through, you know, getting up this morning, finding that my car door locks were frozen, that I had to call the AA in the end. I actually fixed it before the AA actually got here, which gives you something. Sorry, other motoring organisations are available.
I thought that was one of those scenarios which was a sort of lateral thinking test. Arrive at the airport and the, am I not allowed to go down this one?
It depends how far you take it down the runway, Will.
You arrive at the airport, the car door is completely frozen.
Yes.
And how are you going to get into the car and the phone's not working and you can't call anyone at all?
Well, presumably if you'd arrived at the airport, you would have driven there. You would have been in the car in the first place, really.
No, you've flown it. You've left your car at the airport for the last week.
Yeah.
Do you know what you do? I'll tell you. You pee over it.
No. And that wasn't going to happen at 6 o'clock this morning in any way, shape or form. No siree. I mean,
right.
The sort of potential for sort of embarrassment of academics and sort of activities in a village not too far away from this particular institute. No, it's not going to happen.
They say, Alex, what are you doing?
I'm unlocking my car.
Yeah, certain things you just go to. No, much better actually warm the key, take it back inside, put it on the radiator, let the key get warm, and then eventually it worked and it turned. You might say, what about central locking? Doesn't function in the way that central locking normally does. My other alternative was obviously crawl in through the rear entrance, anyway, I digress. Apart from that, everything's wonderful, William. Would you like to find out from the two wonderful folk who are with us, because Hannah Brown and Tessa both send their apologies. Hannah texted in, so did Tessa. Tessa's actually waiting for people to fix things and deliver things, which is, it's all right, Tessa. They'll arrive, it'll all be good. And Hannah equally is having to sort out various other bits and pieces as well. But
are you sure they're not just finding excuses? They've blown you out a few times, haven't they?
Look, please, let's just sort of focus on the good news. We have Katie Dorr. Yay, Katie!
Yes, right, excellent.
And we have Philip Hamlin-Williams. Philip, how would you describe your... Because I've introduced you in various ways, and I think you spoke to William when you were heading up the 2017 Lincoln Literary Festival. Obviously, 2018 is approaching over. But today you're really wearing that hat of this compassionate Lincoln and compassionate Lincoln big soup.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, without reiterating what we've just gone over with Anna Lewis, but I suspect William will not have been listening online from that point of view, could we do a little pre-seed version so we could possibly find out why our romantic novelist could well actually focus a screenplay based around St. Lofocalia Day or Valentine's, etc., which could actually focus on people coming up with big ideas and winning the kitty?
Well, let's roll back and talk about Compassionate Lincoln.
Let's do that.
Because... it came into being a bit over 2 years ago, in the September of, 2015, was it?
Mm-hmm.
There was a horrific picture in the newspapers of a little boy who had drowned off the Greek island of Lesvos.
Mm.
Now, all that summer, Syrian refugees had been taking that incredibly dangerous journey in their thousands, and were crowding onto this Greek island, and the world was ignoring it. That photograph in the newspaper prompted a conversation that actually the wealthy countries such as ours should open our doors and welcome refugees, as we have over decades and centuries. Compassionate Lincoln almost leapt into action, saying, right, these refugees are coming, we'd better prepare. It came out of our frustration for seeing, you know, these desperate images and having, you know, being able to do absolutely nothing about it. So we leapt into action and began to prepare for the refugees who were going to come. Now, of course, the passage of history is such that they didn't come. And they didn't come because, frankly, our county council had no provision for them. And that is tragic. What we did receive, though, was quite a lot of abuse from people who said, well, why on earth do you want to look after refugees when there's need around in your own city? Our response to that was, well, absolutely yes, you're right, there's both. And the big soup, I think, came out of our wish to do something about the need here in our own city. So it is a platform where community groups can come along and pitch their idea on how that they can make a little difference to their own community, whatever that might be.
Exactly. And as we said, the winner, judged for the whole thing, actually wins the whole a worthwhile kitty, shall we say?
Well,
in terms of
you know, small hundreds.
Yes.
And that's lovely. And the people who have won in the past are just, I think, just wonderful projects. Last time we had the Broken Diamond Project. Broken Diamond came out of a women's refuge where this particular young woman had been given refuge, but the time came for her to move out of the refuge into accommodation. That transition was awful. The accommodation was provided, but it was provided with absolutely nothing. No carpets, no curtains, no furniture, nothing. And the trouble is, once you're offered accommodation, you have to go and live in it, even if it's the winter and if you've got small children. So, Broken Diamond, the idea there is to provide a pack of the essential things such a person might need, so they can at least survive in their new home. And that's the one we came last time, and they're going to be coming along to tell us what happened.
William, I mean, this sounds as though what we've got here is a classic case, almost a British case, of actually taking what effectively could be a really tragic story, and what was a tragic story, and also a tragic reflection on, shall we say, some of our fellow citizens, and actually making something which is good out of it. What are your thoughts initially, having heard Philip's lines about how the thing's developing and growing?
What's the most positive story you've had? What's the greatest turnaround you've had with a person?
Well, As the big soup, we are at one step removed. You know, we are not the project. So all we're doing is backing a project and finding out how they got on. Would be the people...
Yeah, well, don't you must get some feedback. So
we
know,
do.
What's the sort of... Yeah, so give us a... You know,
so
the problem that you, with the cell that you've got is that you're talking about these great concepts, but in order to engage with people, we need individual stories like your Syrian, you know, we knew all about the refugees coming over from Africa, but we needed one single picture to strike a chord, and that's what you need. And so what's
so I
story?
Think the project from the previous time that caught the imagination was a group of people who wished to plant an urban space that summer. Previously, there had been no colour there, no plants, just weeds. And they decided, yes, it would be nice to plant this. Very cheaply done, but makes a dramatic difference to the whole feel of an area.
Yeah. It's being proactive. That's good. Katie, any thoughts from yourself?
It sounds wonderful, the concept. And I think, particularly with it being small projects, because it's easy to look at everything that's going on and feel overwhelmed and feel I can't fix this, but you can maybe fix 1% of it.
Yeah.
And I think projects like the Big Soup that give people the opportunity and the ability to change a little thing, they all add up.
They do.
Presumably there is an equivalent in Edinburgh, William, that sort of around from that point of view, or is it just a case of, I haven't got time to do that, I'm too busy doing my screenplays, sorry.
No, they've got all these charities. No, for me, I know most of the beggars within half a mile of here by name, and occasionally we go up, take them out for lunch, that sort of thing, and try and engage is the little I do.
Which actually is maybe what we actually need to do, whatever your particular faith or belief, as we actually head into the season of Lent. Don't just give up things, do something positive. There we are. Little thought for the day. Just do something positive. Actually make that difference. Whatever your beliefs or whatever from that perspective, you can do a small thing, as Katie said, as Philip said, as William said. It can actually have a massive impact from
and
that point of view.
Even if you've not got money, stop and have a chat with somebody. Yeah. I suspect sort of taking somebody out for lunch who's homeless and actually just talking to them like they're a human being must make a massive difference.
That was the thing that took me by surprise. My wife and I went out to Lesvos a couple of years ago. And I hadn't realised that refugees are just like you and me.
Was that because of the media representation?
The media representation.
As soldier. They were strapped with
urban explosives. Myth, the urban myth, these people are in some way different. They're not different at all.
And the words that the media uses, I mean, and the words that politicians use.
Not good.
No, really not good.
No, they're words of abuse. Apparently. Migrant. Mm.
Interesting material, and certainly William a little more focused in terms of ways and harsh in its own zone from that perspective. How is life treating you in Edinburgh in terms of your general overall screenplay writing? I mean, we're doing a little feature on the Newport Film Festival, which actually has a day in London tomorrow to celebrate.
Really?
For the fifth consecutive year, the Newport people are actually coming from Orange County, California, to the British Isles to have a pre-BAFTA special and point out the top 10 best British talent folk to actually watch. Needless to say, I mentioned your good self to the editor of Variety magazine because I fully anticipate you to be actually named there next year. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that was handsome of you. What's going on up here? I've got a cookery lesson, my first ever cookery lesson. My mum, for Christmas, she has shelled out for me to join a whole load of intermediate cooks for 5 lessons on Wednesday evenings for the next month.
So this is going to be something we'll be following through with you, obviously, William. You realise that.
Yeah,
now actually
next week I'll report back to you. Yeah. What it is that I've most cooked last week.
Now, does it go beyond the boiling of the egg or the gradual warming of the toast?
Yes, it's for, I mean, I can cook, okay. It's for intermediate cooks to, take me up to the next level, whatever that is.
Well, that's what they used to say in football clubs about wanting managers who can take your club to the next level. It's very good. I mean, Katie, any advice for what William should be thinking about for his target in terms of cooking and so on?
Being able to cook a really good rare steak. I think that's an art.
Right. Mm. Unless, of course, you're serving vegans, but a rare steak.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a thought. I mean, listen, there was a well-known supermarket chain who actually had cauliflower steak on sale, which people sort of were bemused by, really. It was only £2.50 for a cauliflower steak. Yeah,
it was 4 times the price of an actual
steak. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, precisely. So it's all in the branding, you see. All in the branding. William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I've loved it. Thank you.
Will you be back with us again in the very near future? After your first cookery lesson, good luck with that. Take care.
Yes,
remember, don't run with the knives, okay? That's important. Don't get hyper-excited. Have you got a nice chef's bib as well and a chef's hat? I mean, have you got all the health and safety?
No, hopefully they'll be providing that.
I should sincerely hope so, because if you haven't got the actual sort of mise en scène and the sort of the costume, then how can you ever sort of become the chef? Oh, and try not to swear, William. You're not Gordon Ramsay.
So many nights I long to hold you. They're only to hide my good and shame.
I'm never quite sure when it's Valentine's Day where people start talking over the lyrics. I think just come on, put yourself together, girl. It's not the end of the world, seriously. Same with Phil Oakey. Anyway, welcome, Graham Harper. How are you, sir?
I'm full of cold and flu.
Well, as you know, my commitment to ensuring that the entire world sees at least one Graham Harper-directed programme, even if it's one person at a time, continues ever onwards. And Richard Fitzwilliams, who you may recall we actually spent some time with together with Tessa Snart back at the London Film Festival a year or so ago.
I do.
And needless to say, sent him a copy, or at least sent him a link to iPlayer with respect to Inside Number 9. And my line was, you'll never be able to look at the awards season in the same way again. Richard's response, he really bust a gut. Witty, clever, and some hilarious lines. Thanks for sending. Katie Dorr, your views on Inside Number 9, and the winner is...
I saw it for the first time last night on your recommendation, and I absolutely loved it.
It stole our hearts, Graham.
It really stole our hearts.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
It was just so painfully true to life. To set the scene for Philip Hemlin-Williams, who hasn't as yet caught the magic of Inside Number 9.
Hasn't yet seen it.
Exactly. But, yeah, it'll come. The iPlayer is a wonderful thing.
There is catch-up.
Exactly. There is that line for that. Well, actually, Graham, would you like to describe the story? Because I think you directed it, and obviously Reese Shearsmith and Steve Shearsmith and Reese Pemberton, I always get them confused, but they sort of wrote it. Share with us how you connected and what it was all about.
Well, the piece is about seven members from the business, the film and television business in one form or another, all come together as jurors for a BAFTA-type award, and the room that they're sitting in is they're going to discuss who should be the nominees for the Best Actress for that particular year. So what you've got is a variety of people who are a director, a writer, who writes scripts, and a very famous, almost has-been actress from America who's off-Broadway, but somewhere, like the Trafalgar Theatre, somewhere off Piccadilly, as it were. So she's not quite in the West End, but almost. And all these people have been invited to be jurors, and they all have a different agenda, and those agendas come out during the piece, and they all have a right royal battle and argument and nasty, awful things are said to each other, etc., because the truth comes out about how they all feel about each other rather than necessarily who gets to win. And then who gets to win is got by a very, very strange way. So it's quite interesting.
You've got your film critic. You've got your aging actor who can't abide people who mumble. It's just mumbling. You've got, as you rightly said, Graham, the interesting, I would say, B-list American actress, possibly.
Yeah.
B-list. Not quite. Meryl Streep. Well, certainly well away from Meryl Streep, but in the sort of area there, whose line is effectively, this performance stole my heart. It stole my heart. Exactly. Time and time again, reading exactly the same things that her agent has actually told her to say, because she hasn't actually seen any of the actual sort of things or the performances from that point of view. You've got the writer whose last hit was the start of the century, 2004-2005.
He won an award.
And he's so desperate to please the young director, it's painful.
Played by the fabulous Noel Clarke.
No, he's good.
Well, the Who connection is there. You've got Noel Clarke, you've got Zoe Wanamaker, of course, as the American actress. Exactly so. that too. And then you've got a member of the general public. Keeping the Lincoln Big Soup thing going. Just an ordinary member of the general public. No spoilers, can't say anything else but a member of the general public. You've obviously got the chair of the system, and you've got a film critic. I think I mentioned the film critic who was there. Yes, film critic who was around, who at the end of the day, although she pretends to know everybody and control everybody, she does nothing artistic. She just criticises.
That was a heartbreaking scene.
Exactly. And what do you do? What have you done? What have you done? You know, your entire thing, apart from sort of criticise other people's performances, what have you actually done?
It was more the fact that it was sort of her own realisation that you're seeing in that scene of actually, amid all the sort of very dark humour, I found that really quite affecting.
Which, I mean, definitely, I went on record. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed your previous Inside Number 9s, of course, Graham. I mean, I liked the Bernie Clifton's dressing room. That was poignant. That was heartfelt. That was me. I mean, the Crossroads spoof, the line from that and the twist there. But this one, you have, in the words of our American friends, you basically knocked it out of the ballpark. Knocked it out of the ballpark, sir. That's the line. And such a tragedy that Phil Leonis is unable to actually access BBC iPlayer. Otherwise, he would have probably said exactly the same thing.
It is on iTunes. Am I allowed to say that?
Right. Well, I have. You have, and that's perfectly okay. You know, the more we can spread the word, the more sort of positivity there actually is. So from what you've actually heard, Philip, does it kind of...
Oh, yeah.
As somebody who's actually chaired meetings, been in panels where there has been selection processes involved and so on, you appreciate it. It's,
no, where am I allowed to compare it with the absolutely wonderful W1A?
Well, in a sense, W1A certainly has a very similitude when it comes to the whole thing. I would actually say in this instance it's slightly better.
Yeah.
Because it actually has just got it's just a tad more poignancy.
Yeah.
And there is a lovely twist, which actually is a nice twist at the end. Which, you know, no spoilers, but it was, you know, who would have thought it would have been the film critic who was no. Very sad. Did you enjoy making it, Graham? Was it fun to do?
I did, although I was not very well when I was making it, so I wasn't really firing all cylinders. But that, I mean, it's just, you know, I had to get it done in a certain time, and it took a long time. 7 people round a table who don't really move. I mean, we encouraged one bit of movement going around in the tea break. Mm. But it's quite difficult to shoot and keep it nice and fresh when you've got 7 people around a table, because you're very limited to how you can shoot that. So to make it interesting, keep it interesting. But, you know, that's very unfair of me to say that, because the writing is really interesting with these two guys. They always write some strange twists, and they keep you on your toes.
If memory serves, isn't that one of the first skill sets that one used to learn at director's training school, that actually you have to make it being interesting, actually do a table shoot, and actually, although it seems frightfully simple that you're just having people eating a meal and sitting around a table, to actually shoot it effectively is a real challenge?
It is. And I'm not going to get into it on...
no, I mean, we could talk Dutch tilts, we could talk all sorts of things here, but we won't go there.
I'm going to be boring, but only for about 13 seconds. There is a thing called crossing the line, which is all to do with the angle of your shot. And if you get that wrong, that going round the table will confuse everybody because they won't know who's looking at who, because you have to be very specific the way you shoot it. And those who want to make film and television will know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's that that is the nightmare. And there are ways out of it. There are safety nets that can make it still interesting but get you out of trouble. And without going on to any more detail, that's what I'm going to say about that.
I just think, worst case scenario, pray definitely that you've got a decent editor that can actually make it look good at the end of the day. Because if the shots aren't actually there to choose from and you've crossed the line, disaster. Suddenly the four...
It's a confusing thing. Yeah. And in fact, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I won't say anything. I'm going to start criticising some. Yeah. But I have to tell you that last week, about 4 weeks ago, which was several months after I'd made that episode, I was invited by the Royal Television Society to be a juror on a set of student films.
Irony upon irony, eh, Graham? Irony upon irony.
And I had to say, right at the beginning of my jury meeting, which was about drama, I said, look, before we start, next week or the week after, there is going to be a programme in the Inside Number 9 series made by me, which is about exactly this event, like this, and I don't want you to think that I got those ideas from here, because we did it 3 or 4 months ago, so I don't know what they felt about it.
But, well, in so many ways, life imitates art. I mean, I just believe every time you step through the threshold of the University of Lincoln, it's like going to a different dimension. there we are. As you know, Graham, it's a whole routine. Katie, any other thoughts or comments you have for The Man?
Have you directed any other episodes?
I did one other one in this series, which was episode 2, which was Alexis mentioned.
Bernie Clifton's dressing room.
And it was a very poignant story about two old, well, not old, but middle-aged, getting on to old.
It was like Anton Deck in 40 years' time.
In 40 20 years' time, yeah. having been apart for 30 years, yeah. and because of a row they had, etc. And it's how they come back to reenact and do a comeback show for that particular evening. And, of course, it had a twist and turn of its own right at the end. But it's delightful to see them. And what was delightful was to see them really rehearse before we start shooting for a week how to do all the sketches, because they aren't used to doing those kind of sketches.
And I'd probably revise my Hand and Deck thing. I'd probably say it's more kind of Cannon and Ball.
Okay.
Probably Cannon and Ball, or possibly the Chuckle Brothers-ish, yeah. in terms of, you know, folk who maybe not quite need to reach in. Certainly not Mork or Wise.
Yeah.
People
no,
reach
you,
Stella
you,
routine. We're talking about the ones who never quite, but almost
not
did,
quite had that
but
run.
Still do pantomime every year at Lincoln. I'm sorry, New Lincoln Theatre Royal. Don't worry. I'll sort of through. No, at least they're both alive. Anyway, no spoilers at all. Graham, are you happy to stick? No, not stick around present, because we need to free up the phone line and actually find out what Eva McDonald's been up to when she actually has been zip wiring down in Wales. I know. Yes. Things people want to avoid the show. Anyway, so we should be talking about that. We've got Clive Jackson from Doctor and the Medics, and we've got Larry Nemeczek. And I think in that particular time, what we'll probably do, Graham, is bring you in from the British director's point of view to get a flavour of some authentic documents that Larry Nemeczek has received from the Gene Roddenberry vaults, which actually outline Star Trek The Next Generation, some of the original plans that were put forward to Gene Roddenberry, containing what has to be said some of the most, well, bizarre writing and character descriptions that I've ever encountered from the year 1986. September the 12th, 1986 is the date of the actual correspondence. It's released into the public first time last week by the Star Trek Files. We're going to talk about that in the second part
all
of the
right.
programme as well. So, yeah,
good.
It's amazing. So if all's well, given that the next thing we'll be hearing will be the news on Siren Radio, I will say, Graham, au revoir. And exactly for the moment, because you shall return in the second part of the programme and more magic will ensue.
Lovely.
As I said, you stole my heart.